Welcome to Mysterious Universe, Season 33, Episode 21. Coming up on the show, we've got Mastering the Doorway of the Other World, up close and personal with the Glimmer Intruders, and when your PMS is so bad, you teleport to Gaddafi's palace. I'm your host, Benjamin Grundy. Joining me is Aaron Wright. Come on.
Why do you hit me with these things?
What'd I do?
You never prepare me. You never, like, your PMS is so bad, you end up in Gaddafi's palace.
It happened to Donna Eden in the 1980s.
Anywhere you could go. You could go anywhere in the world. Yeah. Did you go to Gaddafi's palace?
She was teaching a class. This is in San Diego. I think it was the 80s or maybe early 90s. She was teaching an energy healing class. And she said her PMS was so bad. Whenever her PMS gets really bad, it does something to her crown chakra, she says. So she's teaching the class in the middle of the class, like an auditorium full of students. And all of a sudden, this beam of light shoots out of her head. She's like, still on the microphone to the class. She's like, I'm at some palace. Gaddafi's in front of me. Oh, he's actually not that bad. He's quite nice. And she describes this experience of being teleported to Gaddafi's palace with this bizarre kind of experience that happened due to her PMS.
She's describing a form of bilocation.
Yeah.
So she was in two locations at once.
Well, I don't know if Gaddafi was talking to her, but she definitely said that he was much nicer than the news made him out to be. But this is all from a classic. This is from a quality classic. It's called Energy Medicine by Donna Eden. She released this in 1989. And there was an updated version 10 years later.
Oh, I'm familiar with Donna Eden,
absolute
actually.
Classic yeah. In these realms of alternative healing. And the reason I got into this is because she was mentioned in a book that just came out last year. It's a fairly recent one from Eric Leskovitz, The Mystery of Life Energy. And I was reading a chapter on phantom limb syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And we were discussing this on the Last Plus episode, and Donna's work came up because she's been doing this energy medicine for decades now, like nearly four decades.
Well, you were describing a story of where someone had his leg healed because even though he'd lost his limb, he'd lost his leg, he was experiencing pain. And I recall correctly, some healer kind of removed a blockage, but in the phantom limb, yeah. And all the energy flowed out.
It was by the author of that book, Dr. Leskovitz.
Right.
This guy had lost his leg. It was like a skiing accident or he was hit by a car or something. I can't recall all the details, but the doctor said as a last resort, like, why don't we just try this energy massage thing I've been learning? And the guy's like, okay, I've tried everything else. And he starts massaging the empty spot where this guy's leg used to be. And he said,
there's something tangible about it.
The doctor could feel it.
Yeah.
He said, I could feel this. I could feel something there, like some kind of barrier. And it's almost like, he started to smooth out the energy. And amazingly, the patient, as soon as the doctor put his hands down there, he's like, what are you doing? Like, it felt like someone was grabbing his leg. And so, I went into Donna's work and this incredible story got me hooked on the whole thing. This guy had a similar issue, was having phantom limb syndrome, but with his finger. He lost his finger in some kind of machining incident. And his finger, he had kept it preserved in a jar, like pickled it, basically.
I'm sorry, but I don't understand that.
Yeah, why do you keep the bit that gets cut off?
I don't know.
Well, he felt attached to it, so he...
It's like the people that keep nail clippings. If you ever come across someone that does that, leave. They're a sociopath. Get the hell away from them.
My wife's got all my kids' nail clippings, like the very first ones. Not like everyone, but the very first ones.
Okay, yeah, if she starts to keep everyone, then get out bed, but otherwise it's fine.
But say he had his finger that had been amputated in a jar... And his mother had it for some reason.
That's even worse. It was Norman Bates.
It was in his mother's basement. And his mother's basement had heating. It was like a renovated basement.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so he went to see Donna Eden because all of a sudden it had been fine. But he's starting to get this phantom limb syndrome where his finger was. It was getting cold. He's like, my phantom finger is freezing all the time. Like, it feels like it's numb. I feel like I'm getting frostbite. It's awful. I need you to do something about it. Now, with Donna Eden, as you'll find out in the Plus extension, she can see everything. Like, she can look at you, she claims, and see your meridians, your energy points, your chakras, the acupoints. She can see everything. And so she looks at this missing energetic finger.
And she can see where
it is. And she can see that it's kind of still connected to the amputated digit. So she says, well, go and check on it. Go and check on it at your mother's house. So he drives over. He goes to see his mother He says, "Mum, where's my finger?" She's like, "In the jar, in the basement." And she says, "By the way, the heating's out, so it's freezing down there."
Wow.
So her heater had broken. The basement was freezing. It had chilled his amputated finger, which made his phantom energy finger freezing.
See, that's a little bit different, though, to phantom limb syndrome and the stories that we normally discuss, because it's like the limb is, I mean, I guess it is, but it's like the limb is somehow there. They haven't kept the leg. They're feeling the pain because it's there. But this was like a phantom limb telepathy or something.
I think it's because they preserved the finger. If they just tossed it away, obviously there would be no connection. But because the finger was preserved, there's still some slight connection between the material body and the metaphysical body.
So obviously, does it say when he returned it to a, you know, environmentally controlled space that the pain went away?
I just kept on laughing at that story and went on to the next one. There's more coming up in PLOS.
It's a bit weird. Well, that might tie in, strangely enough, with some of the stories that I'm going to be talking about. So I wanted to give a shout out, actually, to my new favorite researcher at the moment. Oh. This is Dirk Gillibell. And he's got these great write-ups. He's kind of like us in the way that he's gone through and he...
So you got a website?
Yeah, he's got a website. It's called soul-guidance.com. He basically just collates collections of stories, but he's got great write-ups, you know, describing, you know, different types of concepts that we go over. And one that really got my attention actually was the translucent humanoid beings. And I thought, okay, this is let's wet our whistle with these sorts of stories. So these are kind of classics in the sense that we've heard a couple of these stories over the years of where people claim that they see a predator type being. And by predator, I mean the Schwarzenegger film from the 1990s of where...
Invisible.
But they're semi-invisible. Right. It's like people see some type of, it's like a scintillating haze like you see on a hot highway, something like that. Or sometimes it's described as being like you can see the outline of this figure. It's normally a humanoid, and this is obviously why it's all about humanoids.
Comes up in Bigfoot stories.
Bigfoot stories. But where it also comes up, and this is where I got into it, this is where actually I found Dirk's work, was because when we've been looking into fey folk encounters, not often, but there are obscure reports of people saying that they're encountering these mini fey type beings, whether they're gnomes or hobgoblins or those sorts of things like hobgoblins that smash up your house, which I was talking about, right? So there are stories of where people say that these beings will somehow be inside their home. And if they don't give them the right reverence, the right kind of respect, they'll destroy things and they'll behave like poltergeist, right? So there'll be items that will be teleported. There'll be things that will be thrown about, things that go flying, a plate or a cup will go flying past your head in the middle of the night. But some people claim in some of these very obscure reports that they can see the entities doing it.
Oh, really?
And when you think it's like a poltergeist kind of thing, for whatever reason, I kind of assume that it's just a normal sized type entity, like a human size. No, they're like little gnome type creatures, but you just see the outlines of them and they kind of phase in and out. And this is like, I've started reading this. I'm like, this ties in with these predator type reports. It's like these beings that do exist within our reality, but they don't totally manifest in our reality. And this is why we see them like this. So I went through a collection of these reports. And as Dirk points out, he says, look, people often encounter these types of beings, but they don't talk about them because it's bad enough that a person would encounter a Bigfoot, for example, in the wilderness. You're already facing ridicule and, you know, people aren't necessarily going to believe you. Some people, I think people are a little bit more open-minded about it today. But the reality is if you have these sorts of encounters, people probably aren't going to believe you. If you come out and say, I saw an invisible being, it's like it's so much further down on the believability scale.
Well, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense as a concept.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So if you go and talk to a person who's not familiar with these topics and these sorts of experiences, they're not going to believe. Even if you go to a cryptozoological researcher, if that cryptozoological researcher is really heavily into the materialistic side of these things, to suggest that they're invisible or that they've got some type of cloaking ability, you'd be laughed out of their office. Like it's something that just seems to be so absurd. And yet these cases come up over and over again. And Dirk points out that for whatever reason, they seem to hang out in the woods. It's like the woods is where these things commonly occur. Although he does say there are a few reports of these beings appearing in people's homes, much like the gnome encounters or the fey folk encounters I was just telling you about. But these particular creatures, they seem to be very agile. They seem to be able to climb a tree, you know, either upside down or straight up, being very maneuverable in a very quick fashion, more so than you'd expect from just a human being. Because one of the arguments that's put forward with these particular sightings, and we'll get into that a little bit later on, but critics of this say, oh no, like, yeah, people are encountering these like glimmering, weird scintillating beings, but it's like testing military technology on civilians. And I'm like, maybe, but I don't think so. I don't.
That's harder to believe than an agile Bigfoot specter.
Well, yeah, it kind of is. Like, because think about it, the military has got such large swathes of land where they could conduct all kinds of operations well out of the eye spy of the public. So I don't think that that's what's going on. And the fact that these reports go back to the 60s, some of them go back into the 1950s, there may be earlier reports, but most of these ones come from the 50s. It suggests to me that it's not some modern military technology, that's something else. It's beings that manifest in our reality, but they can de-manifest in our reality. And this is maybe why we don't have a Bigfoot body, for example. I know that crosses to a more esoteric kind of approach to these beings, but that's probably why we don't, if these things can disappear and cloak themselves in our reality, well, that's why we don't have a body.
Okay, what are we dealing with?
Okay, so of course, yes, he points out contact with Bigfoot or Sasquatch seemingly having a cloaking ability does come up in these cases, but there are other cases that we just don't know what these beings are, but people are left with this very unsettling feeling about what they have seen being very, very real. And it's more important as well when it's not just an individual that sees them, but it's validated by other people that are with them, or in this case, a man who was validated by his father's experience.
Okay.
So this young man said that he'd been an outdoors man most of his life, and he would go fishing and hunting. This was in Louisiana. And he said this particular experience, you know, it takes a lot to leave him unsettled. It takes a lot to cause him to be disturbed. But this experience left him shaking, and it left him questioning a lot in his life. He said he was really hit on the head about how encounters affect people's lives. And he writes that, look, I live in a little town in Grand Paris in Louisiana. It's a very small town, less than 500 people. And the thing about being in a small town like this is that everyone knows everyone. It's like they know what you're having for dinner before you do. So to go out and have these sorts of experiences and then want to publicly talk about it, you're risking a huge amount of ridicule, not just, you know, what we see online these days, but from the entirety of the town.
Yeah, your life's over. You've got to move.
Absolutely. It's just something that you don't want to talk about. So he said that he's grown, as I pointed out earlier, he's grown up hunting and fishing throughout this entire area through the National Forest. He said, you know, this is a beautiful location. It has everything that a growing boy needs. There's lakes, creeks, plenty of wildlife, fishing, hunting, bow hunting, just everything you can do. So he says, look, I'm now in my 30s and I'd never had anything strange happen in my life. I've never seen any lights in the sky. I've never seen anything strange. That is, of course, until last year. And he says this was during bow season. And he said during bow season, he had caught up with his cousin. And he said to his cousin, let's go and hunt in this particular area. And he said he was his hunting buddy and they knew each other really well, obviously being cousins, and would regularly every year, every season, go and do this hunt together. And they were decided to scout out new trails. So maybe this is what makes this a little bit different, because he's been through here so many times, as I must emphasize, and has never encountered anything. But this particular time, they decided to scout out these new trails. He says, it's August, it's hot, it's muggy, and it's pretty much actually quite miserable because of just how intense that it is. He says, but you have to walk. You just have to keep going. And he did. He said, we found a camping spot and we're setting up stuff and everything's going great. Like, he doesn't sense anything. He's just enjoying his time in the wilderness. And his cousin says to him, did you hear something following us? And he's like, come on, like, you're being silly. Stop being silly. We're not kids anymore.
He's like, no. Winding him up.
Yeah, yeah, he really did. He thought he was winding him up. But he's like, no, like, he looks him dead in the eye. And he says, man, I'm not joking. I just thought that you were ignoring it. And that's what I was trying to do. But it's getting close to me and it backs off. And then it comes in close again and then it backs off again. And the witness in this case is like, you're being ridiculous. There's nothing. Like, I haven't heard anything. You're probably tired. We've been hiking all day. You know, you need to get some food into you, get some carbs into you and you'll be fine. And so they do. They kind of calm down because they were, you know, kind of hyping each other up. Everything's fine that evening. But he says that that evening, for whatever reason, it was sitting in his mind. And he said the fire, and he's kind of, yeah, it's like a literature kind of approach to this. And he's like, well, the fire is dancing on the tree trunks. But he said when that was happening and he looked over, he thought that he would see something shimmer. And then he started to think, is there something walking around the camp? And he says this happened all night. It actually left him in this state that he was just a little bit on edge, so much so that he slept with his pistol with him, ready to go. And he says the morning comes, next morning comes, they get up and they pack everything up and they keep scouting for their next location. And as they're scouting through and they get to lunchtime, and he fires up his jet boil, which makes a loud sound. His cousin kind of like indicates to him that, you know, there's something going on. So he turns off the jet boil and the sound kind of goes down. And he says his cousin jumps straight up and freezes. And he says, I look up from what I was eating and I was startled and I asked him, what the hell are you doing? Now, he didn't, or rather couldn't, reply. And that seems to be a recurring theme with these sorts of things, is that people seemingly are paralyzed. I don't even think it's from fear. Fear may play a factor, but there's this additional kind of layer, this paranormal thing that we get often where people encounter something and they can't move. Like, it's like a shadow person kind of encounter. He said that he's just standing there, and the witness in this case, he says, I just looked up to where he was staring, and it was a little clearing about 60 yards in front of us. And I started to get this weird feeling that something wasn't right. And he said, after the night that I just had, all my alarm bells were going off. Like, it was a very distressing kind of thing. Now, he thought maybe this is just a lingering feeling. So he kind of coaxes his cousin for the second time. And in this shaky and whispering voice, his cousin says to him, I see the predator, man.
What?
There it is. And apparently—
So from the movie, all shivery.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he even says, he's like, it's not like the movie. It's not from the movie, but it is. It's this man-shaped shimmer. It was about 10 or 12 feet up a tree and it was crouched down. And he's looking at it and he said, you can clearly tell it's a guy's shape.
Oh.
It's like a man. It's a man, but this shimmering kind of outline.
He didn't see this?
No, although I did think of Lapsuritus as we were going. I was going through these stories.
It's literally on the cover of Kawani's book.
Well, the difference with this though, this is suggesting that it's some type of interdimensional travel. This doesn't necessarily seem to be interdimensional. This is more that they are in our reality, but they're invisible. They're cloaked by something. But in saying that, and some of the stories that I'll tell you in a moment, they also seem to use this to completely disappear from our reality at the same time.
So what did it do? Did it just sit there looking at them, like all of these stories?
Pretty much, right? Like, they're trying to analyze it. Obviously, it's easier to talk about this afterwards, in the sense that it's like, this is all happening in such a fast speed, but this is all kind of going very slowly as they describe it. He says, we were kind of thinking about, well, maybe this is nothing. Maybe we're freaking ourselves out because this thing, this man sitting on this branch up this tree, it hadn't moved an inch. And at that moment, for whatever reason, like it was reading my thoughts, he writes, the thing stands up and drops down off the limb onto the ground. Now, he says, at this point, my heart stops because he's just so freaked out by it. And he says, when it hit the ground, you could hear it making a sound like a person jumping out of a tree. So it's not just simply their imaginations. Mm-hmm. It's not their minds, you know, causing hallucinations.
Did it make a particularly loud thud?
Yeah, it did. It did. And he said, this thing, whatever it was, it stepped down. Like, when it came down, it kind of crouched down, then stepped back against the tree and then made a beeline for them.
Oh.
And as this thing did, he said it moved towards us with this fluid movement of an animal and covered 10 yards in no time before slipping behind some small bush and stopping. Now, he says we grabbed each other and took off. Like, we just got the hell out of there.
It's that feeling when you're about to become a missing 411 statistic.
Well, yeah, that's right. And I was thinking about that as I was going through these reports. I was like, this has a very strange missing 411 kind of feel to them. Like, I wonder if that does explain some of the cases. And in fact, I think Politis touched on this. You know, was it Missing 411, The Hunted? I think that was the documentary. And in fact, I've got a little bit of video coming up from one of those documentaries in a moment where it's like, is this what's causing some people to disappear? Not all of them. But if you encounter this in the wilderness, like, who knows what it can do? Can it pull you into another reality? What could these things do? So he writes that as we were running out of there, this thing was pacing us. And every time we stopped, it stopped. And when we tried to catch our breath, it was there. But it never came any closer than 50 feet. He says, I'm now positive that as they were running back, that when his cousin had initially that first couple of days where they'd been going through and his cousin's like, do you think we're being followed by something? He's like, I'm now positive that that day prior and that night, we'd been pursued by this thing. It was moving with us. Like, it had been with us the entire time. Now, he writes, we eventually made it back to the truck and this thing, this predator, whatever it was, it had shadowed us for over 2 hours. And they threw everything in the back of their truck and got the hell out of there. Now, like a lot of people that have these experiences when they're in pairs or more, they didn't talk about it at all on the way home. They said nothing. He says, we were just exhausted. But now I think about it, we're in some kind of shock.
Yeah, it's such an odd detail, isn't it? You hear it with all sorts of encounters, whether it's a UFO encounter or something like this.
Well,
they sit on this 3-hour drive back and it's the only thing you'd think you'd talk about.
Of course.
But no one wants to talk about it. No one mentions it.
It's like this kind of mental paralysis that persists after the paralysis that they actually experienced during the encounter.
And then in the UFO and abduction reports, those two people who were inseparable friends after this incident.
Their friendship's done.
They don't want to talk to each other. They don't see each other for 20 years. It's very strange.
It is. It's very strange. And I wonder if that's some inbuilt mechanism in us as human beings, that maybe if it was like you're trying to suppress that memory, you would extract yourself from that.
It's just psychological.
Psychological, or because it's so traumatic. Or is it that the beings that are doing this are somehow purposely doing that so you don't talk about it? Because think about it, right? We know from many of these reports of abductions that there seems to be either screen memories or memory suppression going on. Perhaps the memory suppression doesn't work so well when you've got someone to sound off with and talk about. But if you suppress that, well, then there's less of a risk of that kind of thing coming up. So, he said he dropped his cousin at home and he just went home and sat on his porch and looked out at the trees and the houses for many hours, but freaked out. Is that thing out there? Did that thing follow them home? And he said that his wife knew that something wasn't right, but she didn't really, you know, kind of push him about it. She did question him a little bit and he told her and, you know, it made him feel better to be able to talk about it, but it was fine. Now he says, skip forward to Christmas of 2017. It's a few months after this whole thing went down and life had relatively returned to normal. And he said, I was over at my folks' place and they were having a big lunch and it was a great time with the family, a typical Southern Christmas. And he said, I was sitting by the firing alone. He was just having a whiskey. He was just relaxing. And his dad came over with some eggnog and he doesn't normally drink, but his father came and sat down next to him. And his father just says to him, just very, very politely, but he says, so you ran into the phantom too? And he's like,
what?
Yeah. The witness says, what are you talking about? He's like, it's okay. Your wife told, you know, another member of the family, the other member of the family told me. I wanted to tell you that I've seen him.
In the same stretch of woods?
A similar area. He said, I ran into him in senior high school in the winter of 1975. So the witness's report was in the summer, but this was in the winter. And he says that he ran into this thing when he was out in the wilderness. And he said that he was duck hunting with his friend. And he said, whatever this thing was, it was a perfect day. Like the weather was perfect, but he saw something that he can't explain. He said it looked like a stack of wraps, like that clear plastic stuff that you wrap around there. And that's what other people have said in reports.
Glad wrap or whatever.
Yeah, like a Glad wrap or like, Saran wrap, that kind of thing. He said, except this thing, this plastic was in the shape of a man. It was moving along the shoreline of a river system. It was on the opposite river, on the opposite side of the river that they were hunting on. And he said, this thing was between 5 and 6 feet tall, which apparently was similar to the size of the other thing. And he said, the moment that his father and his friend started watching it, it somehow recognized that it was being observed and it froze. Hmm. Again, that ties back to the folklore reports of where I was telling you that these beings seemingly sometimes, when people encounter gnomes or other types of wee creatures in their homes, claim that the beings are actually shocked that they can be seen. And sometimes they do. They pause or they freeze. What's different about this, though, is that as the father and his friend were watching this thing on the bank of the river, as it froze, it realized that, well, it's like, what's it going to do? It can't really stay there frozen. So it then started walking to the water's edge and then slid into the water and went under. Hmm. So it went under the water. Now, that was the end of it. And his father's like, yeah, don't worry about it. Like, we got really scared. We ran to our truck. We got the hell out of there. But we graduated. But he says this, he and his buddy didn't talk about it afterwards. They graduated and they moved on with their lives, suggesting to me, like what you just pointed out, that like they went in opposite directions in their life because this is so terrifying. Now, the dad said that apparently the guy that owns the land that they hunted on, he somehow found out this story and he just laughed. He's like, I've never seen anything like that. But that makes me wonder, just because the owner hasn't, doesn't mean that other people don't encounter those sorts of things. So these sorts of stories continue. Because there are these elements that come up and there's a whole, like this is a really, really big write-up on all these sorts of cases. But I picked out the cases that just seem to have little elements that are a little bit different rather than just seeing one of these things.
Yeah.
So there was this one report about a witness and none of the names, sadly, in many of these cases are included. But this happened in Midwest Illinois. The witness claims that they're around 5 years old when they were playing at the edge of the woods behind their grandmother's home. Now, the witness writes that he often played there and his grandmother would come out and occasionally check on him, but she could see this particular area from her kitchen or living room. And so it wasn't a problem because these huge windows face the woods. And he said he was really fascinated with digging things up. Like, apparently it's not too far from local mounds where there's arrowheads that you could find. So he'd try and go and dig these things up. And he says that, "I remember picking out a spot that I wanted to dig at, and it had been quite a while. And I was digging there and I managed to get quite a big hole going when something caught my eye. It was in a tree." He says, "I don't know how to explain it, but it was almost like a heat wave coming off the branch of the tree." He says, "As he looked, I realized that it wasn't a heat wave or this, whatever this heat wave was, it was in the shape of a human being." Now, he's only 5 years old, so it's difficult for a five-year-old to be able to comprehend what's going on. But he says, "As I'm trying to comprehend that there was this invisible man in the tree and wondering about it, I remember feeling scared and unsure of what to do. But then this thing started moving, and as it moved, it made this faint clicking sound." He says, "And it was that time that I decided that I wasn't supposed to be seeing this thing, and I hightailed it back into my grandmother's home." Now, his grandmother noted that he seemed to be quite shaken by this, and I don't think he told her really anything else. He just said, "Oh, I think I've seen an angel." Like, and because, again, he's five. Like, he doesn't even have the vocabulary to be able, or the knowledge to be able to describe what he's just encountered. But then he says, "I'm 12 years old," right? So nothing really happened until he was 12 years old. And he says his father rented the movie, The Predator. And as soon as he saw that movie, he was
brought
like
it all back.
A triggering of this, these memories of what happened. And he said it all came running back to him. That digging in the dirt came flooding back. And he remembered that he's like, and he said to his father, "Is The Predator real?" And his father's like, "No, it's a movie. It's all made up." And he's like, "I don't think it is." He's like, "There's no internet either back then. I wasn't able to comprehend what was going on." But then flash forward again to around the year 2004, he writes, "I'm grown, I have three small children." And he said, unfortunately, he'd gone through a separation or something and moved into an apartment with kids. And long story short, this apartment sits to the back of, or in front of, a woodland, right? Again, the trees, the woods coming up with this. And one particular evening, he was having a cigarette and he's like out the back because he doesn't want to smoke inside the house. And as he's out the back, looking out into the wilderness, he hears this faint clicking sound, and everything comes back because it's like this sound is like embedded inside him. He remembers this sound and he looks up and there's a movement in the tree to the left of his porch. And it was that same invisible thing that he'd seen when he was 5 years old. It was like a distortion in a humanoid shape. It was crouched down on the branch with an arm holding in the tree trunk. And I just couldn't believe it. The other thing was that apparently the neighbor's dog that never barks went absolutely ballistic and went running over to this thing. And that seemingly caused it to kind of just disappear into the wilderness, into the trees. And they're right, I didn't sleep that night. And I don't think I can ever sleep properly again after experiencing something like that.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut.
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Mit Wieso Steuer? Bis zum 31. Juli abgeben.
So it's strange that you would have this entity following a person what seems to be throughout their lifetime. Now, I don't know if they moved far. I don't know if these houses, the grandmother's house and the apartment building all those years later somehow backed onto the same woods. But I do find it odd that it adds this element of like a supernatural kind of, it becomes
like
a little bit extraterrestrial.
Hunted. It's following them. They're being hunted.
It is.
And I was just looking up the writers of the Predator script, Jim Thomas and his brother John. It was originally called The Hunter.
Really?
That was the working title.
Right.
And I was just trying to find where the inspiration for it came from. Like, did they base it on urban stories or was it someone's experience that they heard? It said it, apparently it was about a joke circulating in Hollywood about something about Rocky, but no one says what the joke was. Here we go. The joke was, after Rocky has beaten every earthly opponent on Earth, the only thing left for him to fight is an alien.
Right.
And then they came up with the idea.
But they could have fought any kind of alien. I'm not, casting anything upon them, but you have to wonder if somehow that concept of these beings somehow leaked into their thinking, something into their creative ideas, because these stories appear to be relatively common. Now, the thing as well is like, the biggest factor about this, I mean, you can always say that people claim in these reports that many of these encounters happened before Predator. The one I just described, it happened before Predator. It was only that they saw that film that they went, I've seen this. Like, I know what this thing is.
What are the odds that you'd have the same, like, the same characteristics of the clicking and the shimmering effect?
Exactly.
For eyewitnesses to go, well, this is bringing back memories of something real.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so the argument is that from a cynical viewpoint or a skeptical viewpoint, is that people saw that movie when they were younger and it left some type of, because I don't know how, but it traumatized them and it left, and now they've created these kind of stories around it. But I don't think that's the case, because there are many cases, as I pointed out, that occurred well before that film.
Yeah, the film was 1987.
Right. Yeah. So there you go. So there's this story of this woman that comes from, this is Western Pennsylvania, and she writes that she and her husband encountered something many years ago. It was in the fall of 2000. They'd recently bought a new home in the Western Pennsylvania area. And apparently she said, we'd driven down the road, this long dirt road, because I'd kind of gotten lost and it turned onto another dirt road. And it's the kind of roads that she writes that only locals would know, because they're so bumpy, they're treacherous, and you don't know where to go. But as they're driving about and they're a little bit lost, and I think this kind of adds to the supernatural element of these kind of things, because when people are kind of in this state of like not knowing where they are, and it changes your perceptual abilities, right? Because you're in a more heightened state and you're kind of confused. Well, she says, we came down this road and there was this thing on the drive in front of us. And she said, I thought it was a deer. She's like, in my mind, something, it was ingrained into my mind that whatever this thing was in the shape of the deer. But she says, as I kept on staring at this thing on the road, I realized I didn't actually know what I was looking at. I knew it wasn't a deer. In fact, it wasn't any animal at all. As my brain tried to comprehend what I was seeing, it became more clear the longer I stared. Now, I'm thinking about this. This sounds like what was described by Mike Cleland when people see, and he's got all those reports of people claiming that they see owls. But the owls, they suddenly realize they're not like a standard-sized owl. I know owls can get big, but they're like, 3 foot, 4 foot tall owls. And there was one report I recall with Mike is that there was something sitting in a tree and he thought it was an owl, and the guy kind of blinked and focused more. And then he realized that it was a little gray, like kind of tucked up, like these predator beings, right? But the fact that this woman is like, her brain is saying, it's a deer. Don't worry, it's a deer. And she's like, it's not a deer. She says, it has the shape of a man, but it's not a man. It was not see-through as you'd expect a ghost to be, but I can't describe really what it was. The only thing that comes close is like, it was water. Like it was standing.
What?
Water.
What was it? Skinny, fat, tall, short?
No. Just like a standard human, like, 5 to 6 foot tall, standard human, but made of water. Like a glass kind of shape, but kind of shimmering as well, but maybe rippling like water, right? And she said, I realized that it was like, it was in a position of where it was a person skulking or sneaking. It was trying to be undetectable.
Didn't start clicking.
No, none of that was described, but apparently another car came from another direction. It was hit by beams of light, and as soon as it was hit by beams of light, she said it kind of was remaining in the squatting position, but then as I kind of were distracted, it just vanished. Like it just disappeared, and she said, this stunned me. I was completely in shock, and she ended up talking to her husband about it afterwards, after this really terrifying experience, because even though they didn't have any direct interactions with this thing, it was just so uncanny. Like that uncanny valley effect, that it was terrifying for them. She spoke to her husband, and her husband's like, yes, this thing was in the shape of a man. It was hunched over as if caught red-handed, and it was cloaked like the predator, but it didn't have the jagged camouflage look. It was a smooth water-like look. So I'm like, okay, and there's something going on here. So there's a report that comes from, still in Pennsylvania, 9 years later, right? So this was in 2000, this happened in Western Pennsylvania. This is in a Pennsylvania national forest. The witnesses in this case claimed that they were there with friends and, was there with a friend. Mm. And they were having this deep conversation about life and spirituality, which is a bit, I mean, that can happen, right? People, you go into these places and there's a kind of a magic about them. And sometimes conversations do lend to, more esoteric kind of topics. But I think about this and it's like, were you kind of, because of the things you were talking about, did that bring about this encounter? Because they said they were talking about life and spirituality when we decided to head down a trail to find a clearing to get some food. And in a moment, apparently the witness said they stopped on this trail to take a break and looked about 30 yards below them. And the woman, Anna, said, hey, do you hear that? And apparently they could hear someone walking in the woods. It was kind of like, but like the first case, in the distance a little bit, like it's pacing them, and they're yelling out to this thing and they're kind of putting a light and they can't see anything, right? Until finally, as they're kind of confused, trying to understand what's occurring around them. Anna's fumbling, trying to find her flashlight. They point this torch up the hill. They both say they have goosebumps over them, even thinking about this, because they realize that it was like they couldn't directly see it, but they could hear what sounded like an invisible child power walking, taking short, quick steps along the path in front of them. Now, it took off and it made these small machine gun-like steps, if that makes any sense.
What?
I know.
Really small,
yeah, like
thousands of little steps.
Yeah, as it was
like
going
along. Like a centipede
along.
Or something.
And he said there was no way that we would have been able to chase it, though, because of the speed that it was moving at. It took off running down the hill. He says this really happened. We don't know what it was, but it wasn't a ghost because it didn't seem to be human. We're wondering if this is some type of fairy or leprechaun. That's the only thing we can equate with it. I'm like, okay, that's a little bit strange. So that's not, and that starts to differ, right? Because you have these reports of people seeing these 5 to 6 foot type big, sometimes larger, like bigger kind of, and they're more, and that's why people do say like it's military men testing stuff. And I'm like, because they're bigger kind of beings, but I'm like, I don't necessarily, as I said before, I don't think that's what's going on. But then these reports of the smaller ones come up. So then, yeah, Bigfoot comes up. This one comes from, was collected from a website called Hernando's Hideaway. And very short, this one, but it basically was a witness saying, as a child, I'd love to explore the wilderness around my home. I was 7 or 8 years old when this happened. I don't remember exactly what happened, but I went for a walk in the woods and I came across a log. It was this very peaceful setting. And the reason why I mentioned this one is that they say that even though as a child, as 8 years old, they didn't really understand what meditation was, they would find that they would sit on this log and this part of the wilderness was very peaceful. So they would just kind of sit and contemplate, like a form of meditating. And I'm like, again, like this altered state that people subtly get themselves into without even realizing. And the witness says, I heard the rustling in the bushes, but this sense of unease comes over me as if I'm being watched. And that, by the way, is a recurring theme that happens in so many of these reports, is that it's not just simply that, oh, you're out having a fun day hunting or going for a bushwalk. It's like people say that the Oz factor kicks in. There's silence everywhere, like uncanny silence and this, like it feels really uncomfortable, or they get a dreadful feeling overwhelming them. It's like there's just, they're horrible, and they don't know where it's coming from, and then they have the encounter. So it's like, it's not just people just seeing an animal in the wilderness. There's like this entire, I guess, emotional sense that comes around it that just really hammers it home to the witness that this is not anything normal. But this is beyond, this is why it is supernatural.
It's not some undiscovered animal. It's
correct.
Not some kind of guy in a military suit.
No.
No,
it's not a hunter in a ghillie suit.
Yeah, it's something paranormal.
It's something paranormal. It's something that human beings need to be wary of. And this witness writes that as I'm sitting there, I get this sensation of course, I'm being watched and I can sense the direction that it's coming from. So I stood up and walked slowly to get a better view when I noticed a very large creature that I could see standing between two trees. He writes it was at least 8 feet tall, maybe more. But as they're looking, basically it's like a Bigfoot. It's being described as a Bigfoot, but it's a Bigfoot in the form of heat waves coming off a hot road surface. It's like this wavy pattern in this form that's there. But they say there wasn't anything causing the heat for this form to be there. And I froze for a moment and pure fear encompassing my entire being, part of that recurring theme, and then finally was able to break the spell and take off running. This witness was quite convinced that they were seeing, as you put on the screen before, Ben, a Lapsarita-style Bigfoot. Like it was somehow cloaked. It was somehow remaining invisible. So then though, it comes to this really interesting report where it starts to cross over into, I don't think these are isolated cases. I don't think it's just, I mean, some of them can be, but I think there's more to it. And I think that happens with a lot of paranormal cases. It's like people have an experience and then they start to go, oh, I've had like a whole history of experiences without even realizing it, right?
And they've just buried them away in the subconscious somehow.
Even recently, because, you know, I really don't like bringing my work into my personal life, but it can't be helped sometimes. And recently I've just been talking to people about, you know, some of the stories we've been discussing, you know, and these people have been saying, and it's funny, they always say this first, I've never experienced anything, but.
Yeah, except for that one time.
It's every time.
Yeah.
And as I start talking to these people, like really lovely people that are very, and this is the thing, rational, like just living their normal lives. And then they go, oh, I've never experienced anything but. And then it's like, oh yeah, and then this happened. Oh, and this happened. Oh, and I saw a UFO. And I'm like, oh my God. Like you've got a lot, but I don't want to terrify them, right? So I don't go, you know, oh, well, you know, it's pretty weird that you're having this many cases. But this is this sort of story, right? So this particular witness, his name's Craig. And Craig basically stated that he's had a lifetime of experiences without realizing that he'd had a lifetime of experiences. So he said, look, I was with my brother and my friend John, and we lived in a suburb of Virginia. It was 1973. I was 16 years old. And one day I decided to ride my bike about 6 miles from my home to a local trailer park and then a creek that was called Little Rock. And basically, it's like he describes how the waters are crystal clear and it's a really nice area to go fishing and just a normal place that he's been plenty of times. But on this particular occasion, he said the woods fell silent and everything felt weird. But even though it was weird, though, we started to fish anyway. And he writes, as we were baiting up, a rock the size of a softball came whizzing by us so fast that you could hear it coming, and it hit the water with such force that it sprayed 20 yards in all directions. Now, he turns to his friend, and apparently John, one of the friends, said, hey, look. And they look back down the creek, and on the edge of the woods, where they'd just been previously fishing, there was this tall, hairy man, dark brown, hair covering his entire body. Right?
It's the big guy.
It's the big guy, right? It's like a Bigfoot. Now, apparently this thing kind of looked at them for 10 seconds. They were looking. It just walked across to some power lines, which I thought was this odd coincidence. Because
I love how he doesn't care. I love how Bigfoot never cares about being seen.
No.
Shrugs his shoulders.
No. But he walks back towards the direction of some power lines about 200 yards away and just disappeared. Now, as soon as they run out, they get home, they return to the house. The mother says, what happened? And they all just say nothing because what can they say? You know, they've just seen something very strange and unusual. So he says years later, he's living in Summer Point in West Virginia, and his brother had come home after school and walked into the house. And apparently their mother was in her usual spot on the couch, and she sees that, you know, her son is like white as a ghost. And apparently, she's white as a ghost, I'm sorry. And the son says, hey, mom, and there's no response from her, right? So the brother calls out to the eyewitness, this Craig, and says, hey, you need to get in here. There's something wrong with mum. So he comes running in and they check and they said, oh my God, there's no response from her. We need to call the rescue squad. But for some reason, Craig's like, no, just wait a moment. She's alive, but she's unresponsive. She can move her eyes. But he said her eyes were full of fear, which is, I'm thinking, well, did she have a stroke? You know, like what's occurring here? But he says after about 15 minutes, she starts to babble about someone walking in, something invisible that came into our home. Now he's like, what? What's going on? So when she's able to talk coherently, she says that she was sitting at home watching TV as the front door opened and an invisible man walked in, came up to her and asked where the oil was.
What?
Now she said that she couldn't move, she couldn't fight, and this thing probed every orifice of her body.
Whoa! Back up a little bit. What do you mean?
Including her personal regions. I don't know what happened.
I like how this show went from PG to R
very quickly.
To adults only immediately.
So apparently, this thing it stuck around for about an hour, and it left. Now, when she's kind of come to, she says, Craig, it sounded like it was ransacking your bedroom. You should go and check it out. So it's like, oh, okay. So he does. He goes and checks his bedroom and he says there's nothing missing except for the fact that he had a bank book sitting on his table near his window. He opens it up and it's missing a $100 bill. So an invisible Bigfoot type or invisible phantom creature, shouldn't say Bigfoot, but an invisible entity came in, felt up his mother, stole $100 only from his bank book and then just left.
I think I've seen this film.
I effed the invisible man. No, I don't think that's what's going on here, right?
Yeah, there's no sense to it.
There's no sense to it.
But it really is like the movie cliche where someone's figured out
What was that? Was it that Kevin Bacon film?
Yeah, The Invisible Man.
Yeah, it kind of does have that to it. But it continues, right? This is a saga that continues. So he writes that I felt like I was being called into an apple orchard that was across the street. Like as he's looking for this $100 bill, like he's looking at his window and something is calling him. So his mother calls him back and she says, look, boys, whatever it was, it didn't harm me. She gave it a name, but he's forgotten what the name was. But she said, you know, like, it's okay. And apparently the other son was like, I don't care what its name is. If the thing ever comes back or comes anywhere near you, I'll kill it. And right then the entire house started to shake with the most evil sounding roar or scream that you've ever heard enveloping the house.
I was going to say, it sounds like a demonic spirit encounter.
Potentially, yes. Yeah, but then But he's seen a Bigfoot down in the woods. So I'm like, is that connected? Is it just coincidence that's going on here? I really don't know. But regardless, so later on, he said it's another hunting season. He's with his buddy Donnie, and they decide that they'll go hunting, right? And they go into that apple orchard that's across the road that, pardon me, previously he felt that he'd been called into. He says as he heads into this row of trees, he says he notices an opening in the trees to his left, and he looks on the lowest branch, which was about 4 feet off the ground, but it was under pressure. Now, he told his friend to stop and showed him, and his friend is like, that's not the weight of the apples. Like, something is holding that down, but there's nothing there, right? And he's like, no, it must be the apples. And Craig says, no. He says, my sixth sense was on point. There was no fear, but I knew something was wrong, so I pointed my gun at this point on the branch. And suddenly the branch flew up as if something had leaped off it and hit the ground running. Now, he and his friend both say they could see the footsteps in the fallen leaves running, but nothing else. There were apples flying from the trees. He said it was being thrown by a baseball pitcher. It was that fast, but not did one ever hit me. That night, the dogs were barking and growling. It's just going crazy. So he goes outside that evening, right? He goes outside because the dogs continue to be crazy. And after what he's just experienced in the apple orchard, it's like, there's something around.
Is it the big guy again?
No. He says, I looked up and I saw a round craft with dimly lit windows, maybe four of them, just shining with this dim light hovering over the house. The light went dim, the windows went out, and it slowly moved off over the woods.
Is this Pennsylvania still?
Yeah, this is Pennsylvania. So, okay. No, it was Virginia.
1977?
This was 1973. Yeah, Virginia. So it's
these hairy, invisible man UFO sightings in the 1970s. There are a dime a dozen.
Really, it's not, but as the crow flies, it's really not that far from Pennsylvania. So, I mean, it's in that vicinity. I mean, I know it's a big space, but it's like, if they have craft, they could easily travel those distances.
What is it about this decade? This decade just had these...
That year as well, right. 1973. It's like it's the same year. It's just, it's so weird. You're right, though. I mean, the whole decade had a lot of weirdness. But 1973 was to 1976 was the peak of this stuff. But later on, right, he says that, this thing came through the trees later on. It was a glimmer in 1980. It sat down beside me. He said he was sitting on a large dead log when he was bull hunting. He said he had his bow on top of his thighs, and whatever this thing was, it sat down. He said, I had a 10-inch buck knife, and I thought to myself, I'm just going to lean across and stab it. As soon as he doesn't say it. He says, as soon as I had this thought, this thing, this invisible thing that sat next to me, says to me in English, don't even think about it. I could have killed you anytime I wanted. You're no challenge. And then it left.
Huh? It spoke English?
It spoke English.
Accent?
No accent. It just spoke.
High German.
Probably high German. But you're right. How many times as well do we hear these reports of people encountering these beings and they speak fluent English?
Is it
they
telepathic speak the language in his head, or is he actually verbally hearing it?
He doesn't say, but I wonder, yeah, is it telepathic? But he just says, as soon as I had that thought, it said to me in English. So maybe saying said sounds like it's speech perhaps, but.
It's a bluff.
I don't know.
Paul, it's bluff.
Yeah.
Roll up your sleeves.
Maybe.
Take it on.
Just go for it. But isn't it weird? Like the fact that these things seem to have a long history for people, you know, like seeing UFOs, seeing a Bigfoot creature, you know, it's like if a person has an encounter, I guess to, you know, a person who's not across these topics, they'll be like, oh, that's weird. But to have all those encounters, it's like, well, either you're making this stuff up, which I don't necessarily think so, or you really are like a magnet to this supernatural phenomena, which I think is more likely in many of these cases. Not all, but many of them. So then there's another report that seems to relate to alien beings. This is where it does come across, because there was an eyewitness that, again, a lot of these stories start with the witness being a child. And what does that sound? It starts like ET encounters, like people that are abductees later in life commonly start realizing that they had experiences when they're a child. Mm. It mirrors that with this stuff, with these kind of weird invisible beings. So this witness says, I was 7 years old, which is around 1973. We were in a mobile home park in Mission, Texas. It was very new, this particular park. So there were only two or three other homes in this whole park, spaced very far apart. It was surrounded by orange groves. So there's your wilderness. So it was relatively isolated. And I don't know if it's still there. I haven't been back to Mission since I left in 1991. But on one morning, early before sunrise. I was woken up by a noise outside my bedroom window. I don't recall clearly what the noise was, but it was enough to raise my curiosity. I figured it was probably coyotes or something like that, but I was quite curious and I wanted to catch a glimpse. I had to stand up on my bed to look out the window, and as I was scanning the yard, they're not coyotes. I noticed a motion to my left and I turned. There was a figure standing next to my mother's car, but it wasn't a full figure. It was an outline of a large being. It was huge. It was several feet taller than the car. I guess it was maybe 6.5 to 7.5 feet in height. It was big and bulky. The shoulders were wide. The legs were very thick. It was clearly humanoid shape, but the insides of the outline were a dark shimmering light, or a dark shimmering light where nothing else around it could kind of escape. It's really difficult to describe it. It's like, it's something that is, again, this kind of weird element of it, like not complying with our understanding of physics. You know, we talk about the laws of physics, but those are laws that have been written by us, of human beings within the understand, you know, our limits of our understanding. I think these beings have far greater understanding than we do. So the witness writes that I was stunned. I was trying to understand what I was seeing. And then it just simply turned away and walked off into the darkness. Now, the kid, being a 7-year-old, jumps out of bed, wakes up the entire house, tells the mother. The mother's like, oh, it's just a bad dream. And the witness says, no, it wasn't a bad dream. I know what I saw. But even being 7 years old, right? But this is what happens. This is where the validation comes in. Several days later, there was a very small article in the local newspaper. The local newspaper was called The Monitor. It was about a local woman who had seen exactly the same thing this child had seen, this witness had seen, only she reported it to the police.
Same area?
Same area. Exactly the same area. Very close. Now, as I recall, the article made the woman out to be a crazy lunatic. So the mother was like, you can't talk to anyone about this. You can't, because it's like, and again, 1973, right? And even for even modern standards, right? Again, these being going back to what Derek described is like, people aren't good. If you saw a Bigfoot, I think people would be, even in their 70s, be like, I saw this weird dude, like weird hairy dude.
Yeah, it's something understood. It's what's the zeitgeist?
Yeah, exactly. It's not some semi-invisible dude that's like a Bigfoot that's also invisible. People aren't going to, they are going to think you're insane. So this is where it becomes a little bit more unsettling. And I think that this is where the elements of screen memories and that kind of stuff plays a role. Because they write, after this incident, I began to recall more and more of the events that happened before I heard the noise outside. So the witness wasn't awoken by the noise outside. They were actually had been awake, and it's like their memory had been suppressed, because the witness says, I actually later on recalled that I was laying in my bed, unable to move. Something was shining a light in my eyes, telling me that they would be gone shortly. And I remember feeling like I was wrapped in a strange thick jello, like this weird substance was around them. I could also see another being in my room looking through my drawers for what I have no idea. And what really stood out about this case is that the witness said the being was shining some type of flashlight-looking device into the drawers. But rather than a light going in, there was some strange greenish light that was coming up and out of the drawers, even though the light source was coming from this instrument or this device that it was using. Apparently, this being also insisted that they would be finished quite soon and everything would be okay and that they will be gone. And apparently that's when they came to, hearing the noise, what they thought was a noise, and looking up outside the window. They write, I have no idea what they were looking for. Perhaps I've found something and they wanted it back. I don't know, and I probably never will. I've never told the story to anyone other than my mother. I've not even told my partner of 18 years this story. Sincerely, Am. And this was actually, I should point out, this particular story was collected from Phantoms and Monsters. So Lorne reported on this. So I don't know what to make of that. You know, the fact that people are having these encounters, like they're seeing these weird glimmering beings, but I think that highlights, it's like maybe people, especially when the sound goes down, something else is happening, but their memories are erased. There's screen memories. There's something going on. And the more that you look into these stories, you start to see this strange extraterrestrial connection to them. So I think that's potentially what's happening here. So there's this other story I want to tell you. It comes from a rural stretch of Washington State, Western Washington State. And the witness says that it was July that this happened. But the witness, I believe was a male. Apparently, he had some property that was heavily wooded, but it was facing, essentially, there were a bunch of local drug addicts that were going and just like hanging out there, and they would start fighting, and it was just creating all these problems. So he would regularly patrol this area of his land. And he said he'd carry his rifle with him because it was becoming so dangerous. He didn't want to use it, but it was becoming dangerous. And he says there was this one particular day where he was just on his standard procedure or his standard kind of role. And he said, I passed this very old, this ancient cedar tree. And he writes, I must have been past it 1.5 million times by now. Like it's never gone done anything. But for whatever reason this day, here's the influence. He said, I suddenly felt as though I should take a seat underneath it. He says, as he sits underneath it, he says, I suddenly felt wonderful. I opened my eyes and rolled my head to the right to look about into the grove of the older trees. And glancing upwards, I see a humanoid shape. It's roughly 15 feet up in the air. It has a distinct shape of a human head, neck and shoulders, but no discernible bottom.
Now, this is a little bit different because he's feeling good about this
situation, right? Yeah.
So is this the spirit of the tree or something?
I don't know. I was thinking that as well. And the fact that it couldn't see the bottom, I thought, oh, is it kind of partially materialized into our reality? Is that what it is? It's not even cloaked. It's just materialized.
Or does it leap off and attack him?
Well, no. He says it just seemed to fade away, right? And he says the only way I can describe it is that it seemed similar to the being in the Predator films. So, okay, all right. He says that for whatever reason he couldn't move. He was petrified. He was terrified.
Okay, he was scared.
Later,
okay.
Yeah, he says anxiety overtook me. I was overwhelmed by this, and he said the only way he could kind of get out of it was by counting. He's like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and got the hell out of there. He said I grabbed my rucksack and chucked it over my shoulder. I grabbed my rifle and sprinted for home, saying a quick prayer as I ran. And I've never encountered anything since. But believe me, there's more to the story, right? So he didn't go back for a few months, and I understand why. Like once you have an experience like that, you don't want to go back there. But he finally was like, no, I'm being silly. I can go back there. He says, I went back, and on my patrol near this tree where I'd been told to sit, I found this strange L-shaped hole. Like it was almost on the very spot where I'd been sitting. He said, though, it was cleanly made. It wasn't something an animal would scratch out. It was like it had been kind of blasted into the ground, like scooped out with something. He says, as I'm standing there, all of a sudden, he knew that he wasn't supposed to be there. It's like this sensation that he got. And he said he would come back and he said he tried to set up a camera. That didn't work. He tried to take photos. That didn't work. And he realized that every time he'd go into this particular area, into this ravine, he said it was filled with these large old growth trees. But every time he'd go there, it would suddenly get extremely windy, as if it was a stormy day. You know, that's the only way he could compare it. And these winds would reach 30, 40 miles per hour, and it would almost block him from going in there. And the temperature would drop about 20 degrees. So for him, he's like, I began to understand that this is a location where I was not welcome to go. So he stopped going there. So I'm like, maybe you're right. Maybe it's not necessarily a being which is dangerous. I mean, it could be. But maybe it is like some tree spirit, and maybe all the other activity that's been going on has stirred it up, and his presence maybe, you know. But I don't know. I think there's a bit more to it than that. And the reason why I mentioned that case is because of the elements that align with missing 411.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of overlapping possibilities.
Many.
But that description.
The wind, the storm weather.
The description of the entity itself seems to be the main consistent thing, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah.
It's just cloaked. It's just some kind of semi-invisible
and,
thing.
Yeah, with the exception of a couple of cases, most of the time it's a standard man.
But it
like
is
a 6-foot normal man.
It is humanoid.
It's humanoid. And then there are some little cases that just kind of get thrown in that come from sources like Reddit. If they came from Reddit for the most part, I kind of dismiss them because I don't know. But then again, it's like, it doesn't really matter. But one witness writes that I was being driven to school. I was around 15 at the time. We were driving down a busy road when I suddenly saw a man walk into the street. It was like the silhouette of a man as if he were invisible. I could only see him because of the reflecting lights and colors around him. And I thought, oh, okay, that ties in with other reports. So there was this one particular report, which isn't the same, but goes into something that I might go into on Tuesday, right? Because I just realized how long we're going. I've still got more. But where some of these stories start to cross over, right, is that some people have suggested, some researchers and some people that are familiar with these experiences say that these beings are manifesting from other realities, right? There's other realities. Now, Brad Steiger has a great write-up on this about these beings seemingly can access doorways. That's when you cross into portals, interdimensional interlopers, that kind of stuff. But there are some times where people accidentally stumble through these doorways.
Sure.
Like there's the classic,
plenty of stories like that.
Plenty of stories. There's plenty. But strangely enough, they're connected to things like elevators, like the actual physical doorways that we have that people walk through, and they'll walk out and they'll come into a completely different dimension.
Like teleporting to Gaddafi's palace.
Pretty much, yeah. It's kind of like that, but it's weird how there's this archetype to it, like this physical archetype of where it's like, for whatever reason, it's crossing something and then they cross
a threshold.
Yeah. Yeah,
an actual physical threshold.
There was this one particular woman, which I'll tell the story full on Tuesday, perhaps. But the crux of it was, which ties into this, is that she was just going about her day. She was in New York and she had grabbed herself a coffee and was walking down the street. And suddenly she just started to feel a bit ill. She started to feel a bit off. She's like, oh, this is kind of strange. And she started to stumble and she fell forward. And when she fell forward, it was like the path was now like the sidewalk, which is concrete. Like, you know, New York, concrete jungle, right? Concrete was gone. It was dirt. She looks up. There's like buggies and carriages.
Oh, she's gone back in time.
Yeah. And she's like, what the hell? And she leans back and kind of jumps back up. And as she jumps back up, she seemingly goes through something and she falls into a man. And it's just another guy walking down the street. And he's a bit shocked because all of a sudden a woman has materialized out of nowhere.
And she just falls onto this man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a great way to pick up.
I've seen that movie too. Disgusting.
So, but that's like, but no, she was terrified. Like somehow she had just tripped over to this other reality and somehow she was able to come back.
I like that idea of temporal layers, like literal layers. Well, you fall through one, you're in a different time.
Well, that's this one story, right? So the other one that I was going to mention was essentially that there was a story of a ranger, right? And this ranger would go into the woods, into the wilderness, you know, because that's their job. That's what they would do. And being rangers, they would have like... because they couldn't staff it all the time. So they'd have, what do you call it? It's not a partner, but whatever they were, you know, like a buddy. And they would take turns about going into these certain locations, right? Well, there's this one particular time where they would go out on their own. And this guy goes out into this area of wilderness that he knows really well. Like he's been doing it for a few years. He knows this area of wilderness so well. But he says, as he wanders through, he trips over something. And as he trips over something, he kind of looks up and it's like, there's this house, this hut that he knows really well. But the hut in our time is, and it's got a time slip feel to it, because the hut in our time is run down, dilapidated, abandoned. No one's been there for a really long time, right? But he says it's refreshed, but there's snow all over the roof of it. Mm. And it's like all around, it's like snow. And he's like, this is weird. And then he realizes, right, that he's like, he's looking at two layers. He can see the hut, like he can see the actual hut. But he can also see a second hut just slightly kind of over the top of it. Like just a little, you know, when you're working in Photoshop, it's just a little bit out when you're dragging the image to the next one. It's over the top of it, right? And there's a man. And there's a man there holding a compass. And he was holding a compass. And it was like somehow maybe a magnetic anomaly or something. But it caused like the reality to kind of shift. And he can see this. And this dude is clearly dressed in clothing, which is decades, decades, decades in the past.
Weird.
And then the guy kind of sees him, which kind of disrupts everything. And he says it was almost as if like a hole opened up in this other reality and it was sucked into the modern reality. And then he finds himself just standing there in front of this normal hut, this dilapidated hut.
He's there.
He's there. He was there and now he wasn't. It was like he's back into our normal reality.
Like someone had adjusted the transparency layer on Photoshop.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was just out of alignment a little bit. That's the other weird part about it. Like it wasn't directly over the top. It was like up a little bit.
Well, we're just presuming it's a previous time, but maybe it's an alternative world.
Well, that's the other
possibility. Never developed electricity or something.
Yeah, that's the other possibility because another story I read as well, which I thought I couldn't get my head around at first. It's actually very simple, but it's been a long day and I was a bit confused, which is not unlike me at all. But it was a story about how a young couple, and I don't remember where it was, but a young couple had, and I thought this was going to be like one of those disappearing houses stories, which are really cool, but I just wasn't in the mood for that. But they were a young couple. They were really excited about looking for houses. And so they went for a drive, right? And they went into this area, which in our time or in our reality was like kind of out in the sticks. So they drive out because obviously when you move further away from the city center, things are cheaper. And they find this house and it's like it just suddenly appeared before them and it is glorious. And it really does have, though, this feeling of what people describe when they see these like Elizabethan time traveling houses where it's like there's a glow to it. There's a warm light coming from it. It beckons you. And so they see this house and there's a big sign out the front.
For sale.
It's a for sale sign.
$10,000.
Well, no. It's just a normal for sale sign. It's like the same currency.
No
like,
price or anything.
No, the price is on it.
Okay.
The same pricing as what you would expect, but it was good pricing, right? It's like, this is a bargain. This is great. The name, there's a photo. So it's all very modern. Like, you know, the difference between a for sale sign, you know, years ago and what we have now.
Course,
it's,
like
a, it's a big billboard.
Printed, yeah.
It's printed. It's got all the details on it. You know, it's all there. So they write down the phone number. of this real estate agent. They get the name, they get everything. Like, this is amazing. So they drive home and they immediately call the real estate agent. They call the real estate agent. They get the right person. They get the everyone knows, like, he's the right person. Sorry, I should clarify. But then they start saying, and he's doing his real estate shtick and like, no, we love this house. We really want to get it. And they go, the real estate agent, whoa, where is this place? And I'm like, oh, it's, you know, such and such address and it's down this road, blah, blah, blah. And the guy's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, that's this nonsense. I do not have a property anywhere near there. I have nothing near there. And she's like, no, like, your sign's out the front. Mm. It's right up. And so she was so angry because this guy was like, he was like insistent, absolutely insistent that there was no house. So they drive back and you know what happens?
There's no house.
It's just a field. It's just a field. There's no sign. It's like the road's there. There was a tree and hill like that they had, like they saw that was there.
Is this in the UK, US?
The US.
Okay.
So immediately I start thinking, I'm like, I thought this was a time slip. I'm like, I don't think this is a time slip.
One of those phantom houses.
Yeah. This, I think, is just a simple alternate dimension. It's like when you think about the multiverse idea, in another reality, right, because of a very subtle decision that person had made, the house was there. A house was built. That real estate agent who lived in that town and serviced that area, he would have been the person to sell that house. So in that reality, that absolutely did happen. But for whatever reason, they crossed back into the normal reality. And it's like, so it reminded me of that case before. It was like this sudden overlapping of realities. And because there was no house there in our reality, that's why it just looked like a house. I wonder if there had been a house there, if it would have been like that previous story. It was just a little bit out of alignment.
If I had my X-Files sound effect for the the house that was listed but wasn't, I would play it.
See, there you go. There you go. Now, of course, there are other cases that come up as well. You've got Hunt for the Skinwalker by Colm Kelleher and George Knapp. Great book. You know, I'll link to it in the show notes if you want to check it out. But there's this story, right, that comes from 1996 where a man showed up at the ranch and he told the rancher that he'd heard about the paranormal activities on the property. And he wanted to meditate. So I'll finish up with this and one more because I thought this is what's happening in so many of these earlier cases. Even though people aren't specifically meditating, it's like they're getting into slightly altered states and that's why they're experiencing these things. So sleep, you know, like meditative states, sleep-like states. It's like, I'm not saying they're hallucinating, not by any means, but I wonder if not being in this absolute, you know, like complete lucidity is allowing them or permitting them to see these things. That's what allows it. That's right. So this particular person shows up at this at the Skinwalker Ranch, which we know is, you know, got a whole heap of activity going on. But basically, there's three people. So there's two other men, and they say, like, the rancher and some other dude and the guy that wants to meditate. So they're like, yeah, okay, fine. So they all pile into the truck and they drive out. They drive out to this particular field. The stranger stands in the middle of this open ground about 100 yards from a tree line. Apparently, Tom, who was one of the other guys there, this was the friend who was watching. And he says, as he's watching, this weird guy that shows up starts meditating, but in this odd, like, faintly religious gesture. He's like standing like Jesus with both of his arms out. It's like he's a little bit nutty, but the sun is casting this beautiful kind of light on the scene. And there's this tall blonde man standing in the middle of this pasture with his eyes closed and his arms raised. And it's like a saint. It's like these images of saints. And he says, in the distance, they hear the chime of a cowbell. And they're like, what the hell's that? We don't have any cowbells. Like, what's this noise? And this cowbell noise gets closer and closer and closer. And Tom says, in the trees, in the distance, he can see a faint blur, but it's something moving very quickly between the trees. Now, he can't make out the shape, but he said it was big. And he's thinking, is this the source of that cowbell sound? Now, without warning, something breaks from the tree line and moves swiftly towards the meditating men. Tom blinked. He didn't see what it was at first, even though it was broad daylight, but it was blurred. It was like something was hidden by a heat distortion and it was moving. It was covering ground at enormous speed. Now, apparently this thing was some type of entity that was making a beeline for the meditator, and the meditator was completely unaware of what was rapidly bearing down upon him. Now, Tom was about to start yelling, but it was too late when this shimmering wraith-like thing stopped just inches from the meditator and let out a deep-throated animal roar that echoed across the ranch.
So when it stopped, surely it was able to see what it was.
Well, it says that this roar sounded like half a bear, half a lion. He was frozen. The stranger leapt back about 10 feet and fell down and started screaming. As fast as it had approached, the shimmering, almost invisible creature, and it is in inverted commas, departed for the tree line at top speed. Tom's sharp eyes could make out only a blur of dancing, flickering, wavy lines like pixelated blocks. Within seconds, the creature had vanished into the trees. Sometime later, Tom and Tad were watching the movie Predator, but they're like, that's pretty much like what the being was that we had seen.
So they didn't go and speak to the guy that was meditating and say,
oh, I'm sure they did.
Are you okay?
I'm sure they did. I'm sure it's in the book, but that's not included here. It's only a few paragraphs that's described.
Does that trigger Bigfoot when you meditate near his forest?
I don't know. Is that what it was? Did that person who was meditating, did they know that they were going to, were they trying to summon something? What were they trying to achieve? It's just, but first, like going and meditating in a spot like that, I know it was early. What was that? That was 1996. So maybe it's not as well known back then as it is now as to some of the really freaky stuff that happened there. So maybe it was like, oh, I can meditate in somewhere. It's spiritual. And then, yeah, you get attacked by a shape-shifting Bigfoot or an invisible shape-shifting Bigfoot. So what I want to leave you with, though, right, this actually reminds me of, you know, a great, you know, David Politis, obviously, in his great Missing 411 documentaries. He mentions a story, which we know, but I want to play it for you anyway, of Jan Maccabee. Now, of course, Jan Maccabee is the wife of the famed ufological researcher, and he's a physicist, I think, Bruce Maccabee. And it's interesting how these people look into these topics and they start to have these encounters. This encounter, I've just cut this up. This is from the story of the Lima, Ohio predator. It's an encounter that Jan had one day when she was hunting.
It was the most beautiful night to deer hunt. It was the second day of season. I wanted to be getting my, you know, run in the woods to hunt. I was really excited about it. There was band over.
If we get pinged for this video on YouTube and at like midnight I have to remix the video and re-upload it,
I'll just link to it.
I am never going
to
forgive you. You know how much extra time it is? If right at the end of this show I get pinged for this video and our YouTube video gets rejected.
I'll send David an email. I'm sure it's all right.
By the time I got to my deer stand, I could hear him. It was all settled in. Didn't see nothing coming down the pass. Trails of birds, crickets, everything were normal wood sounds. All of a sudden, the woods went to this dead quiet. If I had dropped a pin out of that deer stand, it cut off. No birds, no crickets, no nothing. I look and I'm thinking, what is this thing in the trees? It looked like a large piece of saran wrap. It's the only way I can describe it. But this thing was very white. So I'm up 14 foot and it hung quite a ways down. And I'm thinking, what is this thing? It didn't really scare me at that time until it moved and formed the arm that reached over to the other tree. It reached over about 12 to 14 foot and then it all, like a blob, like sucked into it. And it went to the whole other tree. I had this very euphoric feeling like something ain't right here.
See how she said it was euphoric,
though? As it was
though?
Moving through the woods, it went from like tree to tree, and then it disappeared. It didn't continue on. So where it went, I don't know. It's like it just, right before my eyes, vanished. And I don't remember taking the picture, but being married to who I'm married to, Dr. Bruce Maccabee, he always said, if you see anything weird, get a picture. I don't recall actually when either that the sounds had returned. This is like, I don't remember. That's not me to this day. Normally, I would probably crawl down, come run in the house and say, you ain't gonna believe what's back there in them woods.
So let me just stop you for a second.
Yeah, this is gonna get us.
Okay, well, I'll just explain.
We'll get a strike for it. I won't be able to upload it.
Okay, so a few things I want to mention here, though. This is a woman who has a lifetime of experiences through her husband, right? Not that she's directly had her experiences, but she knows about these sorts of things, right? But even though she somehow knows to take a photo, she can't recall, she says that she doesn't go and tell Bruce. Like she kind of just goes back and out like in a stupor, like what happens with so many of these reports. And you would think if anyone was going to do that, it would be Jan. Like she would be telling her husband about what happened. So the kicker to this though, and I'll link to it in full so you can go and check it out for yourself. But essentially she, later on, Bruce says around 11:30 that evening, he receives an email from his nephew, Matthew, right? And his nephew, Matthew, as you saw in that video, was part of that band that was playing that she could hear, that Jan could hear in the distance. And they claim, or he, like, the reason why he emails Bruce is because the band stopped playing because some weird ball of light appeared over them while they were doing their band practice and then just disappeared.
That's right.
Right? Now, when that happens, they happen to be, it came through, they had friends over and they're having dinner. And Jan's like, oh, I wonder if it's connected to the weird saran wrap invisible predator like being I saw today. And Bruce is like, what? What are you talking about? And she's like, oh, I forgot to tell you. And then she remembers. She's like, oh, I took a photo. And what's strange?
Oh, she almost forgot that she took the photo as well.
Yeah. So she pulls out her phone. And what Bruce says is like, he looks at it and you see a photograph before, which is a normal, the normal pixels, a photograph after, normal pixels. But the photograph that she took, right, of this being, and you can see it just looks like it's distorted, right? It just looks like, it does look like what you would take of like plastic in a tree. The ratio and the pixels are all out. Like it's all wrong. And he's like, with this particular BlackBerry phone.
Is that it there?
No, no. So let's skip forward a little bit further. So this, right, this is the normal ratio. That's the that's before and after. So go there. That's the image.
What?
Yeah, that's the image that she claims is the being, right? Now.
Zoomed in?
Zoomed in. Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, right, it's zoomed in because somehow the size, like the pixels of that camera have been altered.
Huh.
Now, Bruce said it's not like it's been altered because you can set three different sizes. He said it hasn't been altered by the software. Someone had to get into that and actually like make it, alter it directly. It's like there's no other way that it could have been altered. And yet somehow
the resolution
of that image had been altered outside of the parameters of what that phone was capable
completely
of.
Completely cropped.
Yep.
That is strange.
So it's like this image had been somehow, so yeah, this one here, you can see, so you've got the custom camera settings. You've got large, medium, and small, but the image that they have is outside of that. It's 400 pixels by 528 pixels.
That's super odd.
Suggesting this weird electronic interference that comes with so many of these encounters. It's like the being knew that she was taking a photo and somehow caused trouble to her phone, altered the image.
And the glowing ball of light, again, links us back firmly in Bigfoot territory.
Yep. And UFO territory.
Mm.
So it's like, where do we have these things? So look, I'll link to that. You're right. I don't want you to get a strike in the middle of the night, Ben. So
no,
I'll...
you will get a strike, my friend, when no, I call you at 3 in the morning.
I'll just turn my phone off. It'll be fine.
Oh, no, I have to re-render the 4K video. You know how long that freaking takes? And then re-upload it?
There's a small
Australian internet.
I like running right at the edge, Ben, especially when you have to deal with
you're
it.
You're asleep when I'm doing all these things. You're like, I'm so tired. I've got to go home.
Actually, not at the moment. I'm not. I'm always awake in the middle of the night. But look, yeah, go and check that out, which I will link to. But also go and check out Derek's blog. Great stuff in there. And yeah, I'll link to the Skinwalker Ranch book as well that describes some of these encounters. Really
good
intriguing
stuff.
Mm.
More coming up on this episode. We're going to be looking at phantom limb syndrome, the work of Donna Eden as well with her energy healing. Do you have a connection to parts of your body that have been severed in amputation? Do you have an energetic scaffolding of your body? So if even parts of your extremities were removed in some bizarre lifestyle choice, you still had some energetic version of what was cut off.
I know where you're going with this. I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot clown pole.
That's coming up in Plus. Head to mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. Sign up today. Get access to the big extensions we do every single Friday. And of course, Plus members get an exclusive show that comes out on Tuesday as well. You're getting more than double the content if you sign up for Plus. Plus members also get a high quality audio version of the show in our podcast feeds. Totally ad-free as well. And if you sign up for our MU Max tier, you get access to the entire back catalogue going back 17 plus years. Check it out, mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. Help support your favourite show. That's a wrap for this free edition of the show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. If you're on Plus, stick around for the great stuff after the break. For everyone else, we'll catch you next week. Welcome back to your Plus extension. Great to have you with us.